Hello, friends, and welcome to Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. I can tell we have angels today because the studio just lit up in this beautiful angelic light. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. And I want to thank everyone so much for listening today and making Out of This World Radio one of the most talkative talk shows in the Seattle area. And we now have over 250,000 listeners in over 90 countries. Our worldwide coverage is now larger than coast to coast. And I just want to thank everyone so much for making this show the fastest growing metaphysical and spiritual radio program in the world. I know that if we all work together, we can and will make this planet a much better and happier place. During the first hour from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Seattle time today, I'll be interviewing a wonderful gentleman, the Honorable Paul Hellyer, the former Canadian Defense Minister. Please stay tuned for his amazing interview. He'll be on the air in just a few minutes. During the first part of the second hour from 3 p.m. to 3:15 p.m., I'll be doing a healing for those who need help with their eyes. I can explain that more during the next hour. I visited Mount Shasta during the first part of September last month, and during that visit, Adama, who's one of the high priests of Telos, asked me if I wanted a healing for my right eye. My right eye has had blurry, farsighted vision for the past 42 years, and he restored my eyesight to 20/10, so I'll have more to say about that during the next hour. From 3:15 to 3:30, I'll be interviewing Mark Burr on the wonderful upcoming Water Conference in Bulgaria from October 18th to the 21st. And then finally, during the latter part of the second hour, from 3:30 to 4 p.m., I'll be interviewing a wonderful medium and psychic named Carol Karaff from Rochester, Minnesota, on the power of intuition and how we can use it. Before we start, I'd like to thank everyone's support for this program because Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. I really appreciate all your wonderful help and support. I'd also like to thank Corey and Saul in Kirkland for their generous help, as well as my new friends Bozina and her husband in beautiful Vancouver, Canada, and of course my friends Marion Elias in Costa Rica and Bradley and Jim in London, England, and everyone around the world who've helped me raise consciousness to make this world a better place. I'd also like to thank the many sponsors of this show, and we're also looking for additional sponsors and advertisers. Any advertising on the program would have a worldwide audience for your goods and services. With that, I'd like to thank my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website, providing wonderful support, my friends in the Galactic Alliance, who've been supporting my show, my angelic and earthly family, and of course, Eric here at KKNW, and KKNW, without whose help and support this program would not be possible. I also have a spiritual mentoring program where I teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides, and if you'd like to get in touch with your loved ones who passed on or contact your guides and get some good spiritual advice, please send me an email anytime to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, and you can also call me here in the United States at 509-750-9793 or toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-888-879-8339. My next Galactic Wisdom Conference, my fifth annual conference, will be held at the same location, Olympia, Washington, at 9101 Stillicum Road from April 12th to the 16th. For more information, please see our website at www.galacticwisdomconference.com. We'll have some amazing people, including Aaron Elizabeth of Health Nut News, as well as Simon Parks, who will be giving presentations. If you register before the end of December 31st, 2018, the cost for the three-day conference will be only $55. If you'd like to register, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. And briefly, before we go to Mr. Hellyer in Toronto, I have some wonderful psychic and spiritual fairs I wanted to tell you about. Tomorrow on Saturday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Seattle time, I'll be at the Art of Vitality Psychic Fair and Healing Fair at the Tukwila Community Center in Tukwila, Washington. The address is 12424 42nd Avenue South, and I hope you can come. Then the next day on Sunday, October 15th, I'll be giving a presentation on scalar energy healing, Tom Palladino's wonderful program that helps heal people at the Crystal Spirit Bookstore and Spiritual Center in Tacoma off the corner of 38th and Cedar. So hope you can come. It's a free presentation. Then on November 10th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., I'll be hosting a very special psychic and healing fair and the Haro Fair with Michiko Hayashi from the Moto Peace Project. You'll be coming in from Tokyo, Japan to give Haro sessions at the fair. And if you'd like a Haro session, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Then again, on March 9th, 2019, I'll be having another healing and psychic fair from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the same location in Olympia, 9101 Stillicum Road in Olympia, Washington. All these events are free. And if you're a vendor would like to have a table, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Quickly, I wanted to tell you that water filters are being delivered now to the Hopi Indians in Arizona. And I want to thank everyone so much for their help and support with that. For many years, the Hopi have been drinking arsenic-flavored carcinogenic water on the reservation with no help from the federal or state governments. But thanks to Leon McLaughlin of the Clean Water Foundation, Martha Childress of the Natural Choice Network, Michiko Hayashi of the Moto Peace Project, and myself and many others, we've raised enough money to buy these units and have them given to the Hopi for free. So I'm so happy about that. And with that, I'd like to bring on my good friend, Paul Hellier, coming to us live today from Toronto, Canada. Paul, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Oh, good. Good. Is the audio...
Having a good day.
Oh, good. Good. Can you hear us okay, Paul?
Yes, I can hear you okay now.
Okay, wonderful. Wonderful. I want to thank you so much for coming on my television show a couple nights ago, Paul. What you had to say was so incredible, and I'm so honored to have you again on today.
Well, it was a real pleasure.
Well, you've written a new book, Paul, called Hope Restored. Could you tell us a little bit about that? I know we talked about it the other day, but many of that television episode won't be coming out for another couple of weeks, and I know many people would love to hear about it.
Yeah, well, first of all, Ed, I've been shaken the last few days by the storms and the damage that they have done to property and lives. And how many people have lost everything. And it really caused me to go back and take a look at the second back book that I wrote called Light at the End of the Tunnel, A Survival Plan for the Human Species. And the first chapter is the human species is hell-bent for extinction. And I guess the thing that worries me is that I estimated then we had 10 years to really do a total change from the oil economy to a clean energy economy without damaging irreparable damage to the planet.
Right.
And virtually nothing has happened in the 8 years since that book was published.
Right.
And so it gets discouraging a little bit because you say, are we going to wake up, or are we just going to go along half asleep until it's beyond the ability of anyone to save the planet as a habitable place for the human species? And then, you know, remember my second last book, which was the second one of a trilogy, was the Money Mafia, A World in Crisis. And I've, again, mentioned this problem, which is uppermost in the minds of a lot of very dedicated people, and had to say that nothing has been done, and that now we had maybe 5 years. And now time is running out on it. And we have to, I know a lot of people have been seduced into believing that this is not a real problem, but it is. The United Nations put out a bombshell report over the weekend and said, in effect, that if we don't make some real progress in the next 20 years, that it's going to be game over. So that has been very much on my mind, and it reminded me that when I wrote the book 8 years ago, that I was influenced heavily by a book called The Flood of My Grandchildren. Can't remember the author's name, but that was the title of the book. Well, it's not the floods of the grandchildren now. It's the floods of our children, ourselves. And then, of course, it's going to be our grandchildren, great-grandchildren afterward, until we're in so much trouble that doing something about it, it's going to be extremely difficult. Now, the remedy that I have put in two of the books, at least, including the one that you referred to, my latest, which has just come out a few days ago, called Hope Restored, is that we do the opposite to what we did in World War II. I remember it well because I was an adult then and in the armed forces for a couple of years, and we converted every automobile plant and every washing machine plant and every refrigerator plant into a plant to make armament. And it worked and provided the necessary machines to ultimately get the armistice that occurred in 45.
Right.
But now what we have to do is just the exact opposite. We have to start demilitarizing the planet in a really substantial way, because war has got to end. War is obsolete. The weapons we have today are so bad that if we were to get into a war, it could result in the annihilation of most of the people on the planet. Mm-hmm. So we have to start converting these plants, the industrial military complex that General Eisenhower talked about, converting them into plants to make zero-point energy engines. Mm-hmm. And we can put zero-point energy engines into cars and trucks and tractors and homes. Very important to put one in each home. And all of the change the whole system from one that's going to cook the planet to one that at least will stop the carnage before it becomes absolutely impossible to reverse. So I'm really pitching that. I've done it in two or three books, mm-hmm. and I've done it in the latest book, to get people to think of, say, saying to each other, we can't have another war, another world war, because the weapons have been getting so much more lethal every time. And you go back in history, the wars with people using sticks and then swords and spears and then later guns where you loaded them with powder from the end and guns where you didn't have to do that, and machine guns and so on, right through until we finally, at the end of World War II, used the most dreadful of all weapons up until then, which were the atomic weapons and the thermonuclear, well, the atomic and were used in World War II. And I remember that, of course, so well, because the very first atomic bomb was dropped on my birthday, August the 6th.
Oh, really? My goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not a very happy thing to remember your birthday by.
Right.
But it is something we could never forget.
Right.
And
I don't have
any trouble remembering my birthday.
Right. You had did you have an explosive birthday? You've had explosive. Well, anyway, that's a bad joke, but yeah.
Pardon me?
I was just going to say that that's quite a date to be born on with the anniversary, of course.
It is.
Yeah.
So now we have to know that since then, since World War II, with the change in atmosphere, in the sense that a lot of more visitors from other planets and star systems have come to Earth. And I'm sure that most of your listeners know that they had been coming for thousands of years. This was verified, you know, beyond doubt. Not that some of us didn't doubt, but beyond doubt in the 60s when there was a flotilla or armada or whatever went you want to call it, that of flying saucers that came south over Europe, and the commander of the supreme of the Allied forces in Europe, the supreme Allied commander, was so concerned that they came within just, I don't know, seconds or minutes or whatever, of pressing the alarm button. But then this group of flying saucers, I think there were about 50 of them, turned around, mm-hmm. went back north over the North Pole. And so he ordered an investigation. And the investigation, I think, took 3 years or something like that. And the result of the investigation was that at least four species had been visiting planet Earth for thousands and thousands of years. So this is not new, but in 1945, after the U.S. had tested a couple of bombs and dropped the one in Hiroshima, the visitors became so concerned about it that they started coming in greater numbers from mm-hmm. various places. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that our cosmos is a one. It's all connected. And bombs like that we put off here have an effect all throughout the system.
Right.
And you can't do anything of that magnitude without influencing people in other planets and so on, right across the universe and into other universes. And so, as everyone, probably all of your listeners know, there were crashes at near Roswell, New Mexico, July the 4th, 1947. There were actually two, but we talk about one. This machine was retrieved, and since then has been back engineered,
right,
by the United States and by Russia and by others. And some of the weapons that they had. The weaponry that the visitors have was advanced over our own. And now we have spaceships of our own making, which are so deadly. They have particle guns, and they have other machines that they have made, which will do so much damage that if we were to get into another war, which some people are actually recommending, would like to see us take Russia on for size, and there's a lot of propaganda coming out at the moment in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to do that, all we'd have to do is get a little escalation, and it would be goodbye Earth as far as having a future for ourselves and our children and our grandchildren, or great-grandchildren, in my case, because I have four cute little great-grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the time to come to start. I don't like the word preaching, but this is the time to start suggesting that if we want to survive, we have to change course. Otherwise, we're going to go over the dam or over the falls and crash, and maybe our planet will become as desolate as Mars did after it got involved in the nuclear war, and they had to survivors had to go underground because the surface of the planet was no longer livable. So there's where we are, and it's something that I think we all have to take very seriously, and say, okay, enough of this building armaments that we don't really need, because we don't have to have another war. It isn't necessary, and it's easily avoidable, I think, at this stage, if everybody gets together and agrees that the kind of world we want is one where everybody can live in peace, and where everybody has enough food and water and clothing and education and health care and so on to have a decent kind of a life. And this this is possible if just a percentage, a small percentage of what we've been spending on armaments. It's just astronomical, the amount of trillions of dollars. You've probably seen the papers where I think it's $21 trillion that the Pentagon isn't able to account for.
Yeah,
can you imagine the lethal weapons that have been made by $21 trillion?
Oh, yeah.
That's only what can't be accounted for.
Yeah.
There's lots of other expenditures that Congress actually approved and they know about.
Oh, yeah.
But this is what they apparently don't know about. So we have to change the things. And go back to my days in the military, we had an order about ta. That means you just turn around and go back the way you came.
Right.
And that's what we've got to do as far as our planet is concerned if we want to avoid a catastrophe and if we want to have our species survive and to have justice as well as peace here on the planet.
Well,
it's a big order, but we can do it if we want to, and that's problem is getting enough people to want to do something to, you know, raise you know what about it.
Yep.
It's got to happen.
I couldn't agree with you more, Paul. You know, 57% of the GDP here in the United States is devoted to the military-industrial complex. And there's a famous quote from President Eisenhower. I can't remember the exact words, but he said every dollar spent on the military, of course, and weapons means that much less money for education, health, the environment. And you're seeing that.
You've got it. That's what he said.
Yeah, that's right.
It's every dollar spent on one of those is a dollar less spent on education.
That's right.
Health and all of the other things that people need for a decent life.
Right.
And for what purpose?
Right.
Because it, as a species, we've been trained to say somebody's got to be top dog and be in a position to kill more people than anybody else.
Right.
And that situation has got to end because the stakes are too high now. There's not the question of mobilizing and so on as we've done before. We were in a position now where it's really, as I said, turn around and head in the direction of peace and goodwill and cooperation. As opposed to the history that we've had in the last few years. And then, of course, the way to pay for this new energy idea, well, first of all, we've got to get the United States to release the patents and make them available to people all over the world. And everybody seems to know that a lot of inventors have come up with different machines that will work to produce the zero-point energy.
Sure.
For years and years and years. What happens to them? They have a visit from the CIA or somebody, and their machines are stolen, or their laboratories are ransacked. And I had dinner with somebody 4 or 5 nights ago who has been talking to people in the United States who have produced this sort of thing. And they're just frightened out of their wits that somebody's going to track them down and kill them.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
who has the right to do that?
Right. I couldn't agree with you more. Well, you know, Paul, I you probably know about this, but there was actually a car produced in the early 1990s here in America by a fellow, Stan Meyer, I think his name was, in Ohio, and he was murdered. It was a car that ran on water, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
And after he was murdered, the technology disappeared, and now you can't find anything about it. But, I mean, the solutions have been out there, so we don't need oil, and we don't need to continue the kind of pollution to destroying the planet. I mean, there's solutions out there, but I think the people of this planet need the political will to persevere and know that there's a better way for all of us here. And we don't. And along with that, too, I think it's the basic human nature of people on this planet to be kind, benevolent, loving, and to live in harmony. We're not.
Absolutely.
That's not part of our nature to be fighting all the time. You know, it just isn't. And yet,
to get the money to do this, first of all, if we stop making armaments, there'd be a lot of money available to introduce the new energy sources.
Right.
About millions of it, or trillions. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, as you know, one of my pet beefs is the financial system.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of the, it's not the most urgent, not the most important thing in the world, but it's the most urgent.
Right.
Because people keep on with the system, which creates shortages of money. And so they say, well, we can't do that. We can't make the park, or we can't provide health care, or we can't do this or that.
Right.
Because there isn't enough money.
Right.
Money is just a book entry. That's what most people don't understand.
Right.
And the United States made a huge mistake a little over 100 years ago.
Right.
When some sharp operators devised a plan to get Congress to give them the people's right to create money.
Right, in violation
of... The people own the patent.
Right, exactly.
Along come a few people, and they had a little... Well, what happened? Really, the two or three top bankers in the world said, you know, we can't compete with each other without hurting each other. What we want is a monopoly situation.
Right.
Under our control. So they had a little meeting in Jekyll Island, and they worked out a system and presented it to Congress and finally got it through just before Christmas, when the congressmen were probably thinking of sugar plum fairies or something or other. And as I remember, there was only one congressman that really hit the nail on the head, and that was Lindbergh.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, this is wrong, wrong, wrong. And that was the same conclusion that other people came to three or four years later, including the president. But that's over a century ago. And after having given the right to create money to a few private individuals and have given them the ability to create trillions of dollars out of thin air and then lend that money, I created money, to the governments of the world's countries and recollect it with interest from the taxpayers. It's just absolutely horrendous.
And there were
to think that we have not been able to educate our people.
Right.
That we have not been able to provide them with adequate health care. And that we have not been able to provide them a decent paying job.
Or even environmental care. I mean, the Hopi Indians right now in Arizona, no thanks to the federal government or the state government, were drinking up until recently arsenic-flavored carcinogenic drinking water. My friends and I got the money together, raised the money to provide clean water filters, so now that they're starting to drink clean water. But, you know, we have plenty of money in the United States for the latest nuclear bombs, but no money to help people. I mean, especially
on that same subject, Ed, in Canada, we have, I can't remember how many, but dozens and dozens of First Nations reserves, mm-hmm. where they have to boil their water.
Wow.
And it's a tragedy, and we politicians talk about it year after year and mm-hmm. year after year, and then do nothing.
Well, I want to go back to the bankers a little bit. There's a quote I just found that Rothschild said, member of the Rothschild family, said in 1838, this is an amazing quote, he said, "Permit me to issue and control the money of a nation, and I care not who makes its laws." In other words, they have complete control. This is a maximum, and certainly I think that's... Absolutely,
that was what he said, and no truer words were ever said.
Sure, right, yeah.
Whoever has the right to create the money not only makes all the profit, but has most of the power.
Right.
because then they can decide who can get it and who can't, who's going to prosper and who isn't, who's going to have jobs and who are not going to have jobs. And they shouldn't have that power.
Sure.
Elected representatives should have that power. And so one of the things that I'm recommending in my new book,
mm-hmm.
and it's not a new idea for me, is that the Fed be nationalized and that it start creating, I've suggested in my last two books, in the Money Mafia, and I still am pushing this idea, 34% of all the money created be available for the government to spend for the benefit of the people.
Oh, there's a good idea.
And it still leaves the banks with enough money creation power for people who decide they'd like to start a little business or mm-hmm. to expand a little business and so on, so that they're not without a little ability to help people, but they don't get all the gravy. Instead of getting 20 times what they invest, they would only get 2 times the amount of cash that they had in their vault, and this would reduce what we call a leverage from 20 to 1 to 2 to 1.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was when the Bank of England was first incorporated 300 years ago, a little mm-hmm. over. And somehow they have managed to, in that time, to persuade politicians to give them a monopoly. And they should not have a monopoly to create money. So it is one of the most important changes that has to take place very soon, I would say.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. Well, there were two presidents in the United, at least two, I think three, who tried to change the Federal Reserve. There was John F. Kennedy, of course, who was assassinated. Abraham Lincoln also tried to change, tried to fight the banks, and he was assassinated. And then there was also Andrew Jackson. He wasn't assassinated, but he had a battle on his hands during the 1830s against the banks. So
it can't be a one man decision.
Right. Right.
It has to be done by the general will. In other words, the Congress generally has to say this is going to happen.
Sure, sure.
And the president doesn't have to take the rap for doing it because we're doing it together.
Right, right.
And that's what's got to happen. And the only way that's going to happen is if millions of Americans tell their member of Congress, their senator, we want the Fed to be nationalized and to change the system for the benefit of the people and give them back a little bit of what they already have, of what they really own,
right.
which they should have
right.
for their own benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So this is part of my pitch at the present time. As you know, I was hoping to have this book, Hope Restored, published and out just so that we could really put on a campaign before the midterm elections.
Mm-hmm.
But it was too late. And so now we're just going to have to tread water for a few weeks and see what happens and then restart the engines after the new Congress is formed and meets. And there are a number of things that that have to be done. As you know from our broadcast, our television thing, and we're going to have to get rid of the CIA. And that is because it is responsible for much of the evil that is going on in the world today and has
right.
been. They were put together for what might have been a noble cause, but they have departed so far from it
right.
that there's no redemption. They have, in my opinion, obviously been involved in a number of accidents that people have had when they started to tell the truth about what was going on or wanted to tell the truth about what was going on.
Right.
And they have been responsible for implementing this program of continuous war or continual war.
Mm-hmm.
Have a war all the time. For whose benefit?
Right.
For the benefit of the industrial group, the military-industrial and now military-industrial intelligence group who have been running things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's got to go. And also, I mentioned on the other program that they have been either the biggest or one of the biggest drug dealers in America. And imagine, you have a war on drugs. And that's taking up a lot of time of policemen and others, the court system and so on.
Right.
At the same time, it's a governmental institution, which is the principal drug dealer.
Right. Right.
Can you think of anything more ridiculous than that?
I can't. I can't.
No.
I can't.
And I mentioned, too, that I think it was Dr. Greer,
mm-hmm.
in his latest book, said that he has found out from the very best sources that now they have these anti-gravity machines,
mm-hmm.
both the kind that have to operate within our atmosphere and the kind that can go to other stars, other planets, rather, and that the CIA has a policy of sending, I don't know how many, but some of those machines, loading them up with weapons and drugs and taking them to the Middle East and selling them for cash.
Oh, my goodness.
They leave very early in the morning, every
wow.
morning. And so, obviously, they're selling the people's weapons for cash.
Right.
And they're selling illicit drugs for cash in order to further their efforts to build up an invincible military machine to install the New World Order.
Right.
Which, in fact, is the fascist world government. That's what's planned.
You know...
To give it this fancy name, New World Order, that's what Bush Sr. said it was. Sounded great.
Yeah.
Sounded like the kind of world we were talking about earlier.
Sure.
But it's not.
You know, Paul, having you on even for 1 hour doesn't do justice to all your ideas and the many things we talked about on my TV show a couple nights ago, or even in your book. So I hope you don't mind me asking you this on the air, but I'd love to have you come back before the elections, maybe October 26th, and I'll devote 2 hours full time just to you and your ideas.
I think I'll pass on the before the election invitation, Ted, because I'm a Canadian.
Okay.
And I have an interest, really, as do all the people of the world, about U.S. election. But I'm far more interested in what the president and Congress are going to do after the election.
Okay, all right.
Because it's then that we have to appeal to them.
Sure.
And get Americans mobilized to say, you have to get rid of the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
You have to put the NSA in a moratorium for a while, and so that... they can't spy on every single person in the world, practically, that they want to spy on.
Right.
And you have to shut down DARPA, establishment temporarily, until Congress can find out what's going on, because some of the things that are being done and planned are just really too horrendous for polite talk.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of other things on the list. The Space Command has to be grounded until they have a chance to find out who will represent Earth in space, and if it can be a joint effort, which it obviously must be, and Congress can address all of these things, if millions of Americans just say to them, lightly or otherwise, after the election, Congressman or Senator, these are a list of 6 or 7 things that we want done, and if you don't do them, and do them right away, you're going to be toast when the next election comes along.
Yeah, good.
That's the only thing that will have any effect on them.
Right, right.
Because otherwise, they're thinking about their election contributions.
Sure.
And the sources of money for their campaigns.
That's right.
As you know, the amounts in some cases are just absolutely
phenomenal.
What's the word? Indecent?
Yeah, indecent. Indecent, Paul.
Indecent. So, as I point out in my book, this is not the reforms to prevent the people who have really been running the United States, but like Colin McCabell and others do. But they're really fascist.
Yeah.
Have a strong Nazi influence. It's been there for
many years.
Oh, 70 years.
70 years, yeah.
And the only way that you're going to get any action is not from the top, because the top is all compromised.
Right.
It has to be from the bottom up. It has to be billions and millions of decent Americans who say, hey, we didn't know what was going on.
Right.
They didn't tell us anything.
Right.
As a matter of fact, they didn't. The shadow government, as they call it, didn't tell the truth about anything of substance that I know of.
That's right. That's right.
From
Paul.
July 4th, 1947, through until they talked about the Russian influence in the election.
Right.
That was the first time they told the truth in 70 years.
Yeah, amazing.
That they had madness, method in their madness, because they want to turn the people against the Russians.
Sure.
Because there are a few psychotic generals who think that now, when they have built the electronic fence around the world, that they could actually start a nuclear war and have enough survivors to make it worthwhile.
Right. Crazy. Absolutely crazy.
It is madness.
Paul, just before going on air, I got an email from a friend of mine in England, actually, who wants to say hi to you. Just be on for a minute. Would you like to meet Simon Parks? We'll try to bring him on just for a minute, if you like.
Well, it's your show, so you do as you like.
Okay, well, I'll just bring on Eric, if we could try to get a hold of Simon. But just for a minute, he wanted to say hi to you, meet you. Your book's amazing. I couldn't find a copy here, but I've ordered it. I should be getting it next week. But the things we talked about on the TV show a few days ago was just amazing, Paul. I'm looking at my notes. I think things will turn around, though, because there are more good people. Most people in the world want to create a better planet, Paul, I think, and they want peace and harmony. They don't want to be fighting constantly.
That's true, Ted. Do you want to know the problem?
What?
Each person says there's nothing I can do about it.
Ah, yeah.
That's the killer. Mm-hmm. I've heard it so many times. Absolutely. The world's a mess.
Right.
It's going to where in a handbasket.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I just wish somebody would do something about it. But there's nothing I can do about it, because I've got to pay the mortgage and get food on the table for the kids and get them new shoes for the season and all of that sort of thing. And so nothing happens, and nothing will happen.
Right.
As long as people have that attitude, as long as they say we are powerless.
Right.
They're powerless if they don't do anything.
Right, exactly.
That is the bottom line, and I agree with that. But you can do something.
Sure.
If politicians really believe that their reelection is in jeopardy.
Sure. That's true. Absolutely.
Because that's more important to them than money.
Right. That's right.
And all of a sudden,
that's right.
You know, the heads of banks and so on that they treat as, as royalty cease to be so important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if the people are going to vote against them,
sure,
then it doesn't matter whether you spend an extra million or two on your campaign.
Right.
You're still not going to get elected.
That's right. That's a good point.
And then all of a sudden, they begin to get a little bit of reality.
Yeah.
Setting in.
Yeah.
Saying, maybe, yes, we should listen to the people.
Good.
And do what they say and try and represent them more fairly.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more, Paul. We have, I'm just going to bring on Simon Parks live from England just for a few minutes. He wants to say hi to you. Simon, are you there?
Hello, Ted. Yes, I am. Well, thank you ever so much for letting me come on.
Oh.
Hi, Paul. Lovely to have a quick chat with you.
Well, thank you.
I think both of you want to make the world certainly a better place, and I'm so glad that you wrote me just before going on air and said you wanted to come on just for a minute and say hi to Paul. I'm sure that you have a lot to talk about.
Well, I've got a lot in common with Paul because I, as you know, Ted, I was a politician here in Great Britain, and of course we know that Paul was the Minister of Defence in Canada, so it's just nice to touch base with him.
Well, it's good to talk to a fellow politician, and especially one who is really interested in the affairs of the people and not just in their own personal pursuits. There are a lot of decent people, but we've got to mobilize them. And one of the things that I recommend, sort of in closing here, is that Congress has got to set up a joint committee to start finding out the truth, because I made the statement earlier that the shadow government hadn't told the truth about anything from July 4th, 19, anything of substance. From July 4th, 1947, until after 2017, and they get 2018 and start talking about the truth. The Russians were meddling a little bit in their election. I guess as an outsider, I had a little bit of smile over that, because CIA's been interfering in other people's elections for as far back as I can remember. And I know that as a fact, because I was party to one of them in Canada when they were setting up one party against the other. So they've got to start getting the truth. And that means they're going to have to give an amnesty from the National Security Act to people who have been involved in the black operations, who have been involved in back engineering the spaceships and the weapons, and who have been wiring up the world in order to bump people off one at a time if they don't like them. And get them to talk, because a lot of them want to talk, but they couldn't afford to now, because they would get a big fine, they would lose their pension, and they would lose their rights of many kinds. So the price is just too high to tell the truth under those existing circumstances. So they have to set up an amnesty, and then start allowing the story to be told going back to 47 and everything that's happened since. And it is quite a story. And the problem is that very few people in the world are at least familiar with it. They don't know what's going on, and they don't know what lies in store for them. And it's time they did. And if the Congress really digs in and gets the truth out, then it will be possible to avoid the coup that otherwise will take place in order to establish the fascist world government. It can be stopped. There's something that can be done about it. But it's going to take millions of people to convince congressmen that the people's rights, the people's future, are more important than being able to get a little extra money for their campaign or whatever it is that they're immediately concerned about. So these are some of the things that that are in my book. The last chapter has lists of things that has to be done, and also mentions the necessity of having the amnesty. I'm going to have to rewrite the last chapter because I'll just tune it up to fit the situation after the new Congress is established.
Do you think, Paul, do you think your editors will let you put material from my book in your rewrite? Or
I doubt it very much. I'll tell you exactly what they said.
Okay. All right.
You know what? Maybe I better not.
Okay.
I better just tell you privately sometime.
Oh, that's fine. They thought I was pretty out there. I know. Well, it's all right. It's okay.
They were convincing. They're quite convincing, but I'll tell you privately to give you the exact quote.
Okay, that's fine. Some things are better said off air. Simon and Paul, I want to give you, how are your eyesight? Do you wear glasses? Both of you wear glasses?
I wear glasses to read.
Okay.
But I don't wear glasses to drive.
Okay. Okay.
Which is pretty good for a 95-year-old.
My goodness, that's amazing. And Simon, do you wear glasses?
I wear glasses to drive, but not to read.
Okay. Well, how would you, both of you, like a healing in a few minutes? And the reason I'm asking, I'm serious when I say this. When I was in Mount Shasta last month, Adama, the high priest of Telos, healed my eyes. I had blurry 20/50, 20/40 vision in my right eye. He healed my right eye, so now I have perfect 10/20, 20/15 vision in both right and left eyes. And he told me 2 days ago that I could transfer this healing to listeners and to both of you gentlemen. So I'd like to give you a healing means you'd have to stay on another 10 minutes maybe, and I'll give you both a healing on the air if you wish.
Sounds great.
Okay. Okay. Paul, would you mind staying on a few more minutes?
I can just do that and not start a revolution here in the home.
Okay.
I couldn't go any longer, though, that's for sure.
All right. Well, I'll do you first then, and I'll start right after the... Well, we can start now, actually. We've got about 3 minutes left at this hour, and then we can continue it on to the first of the hour. But, they said that I could transfer this healing to others. So everyone listening today, including Paul and Simon, if you put both of your hands over your heart, and then I want you to, in your mind, go to a place called Mount Shasta, Northern California. I know you've never been there before, but it's a beautiful place. And it's also the home of the city of Telos and the Lemurians who live there. And Adama is one of the high priests of Telos, and he just came in now. And this is going to take some time to do, but send him lots of love and light, and I'm going to ask him to heal both of your eyesight to give him...
Maybe we better leave it for another time, because I don't have a phone here that I can put on...
Okay, to leave your pants. Okay, we'll do it another time, Paul.
So I couldn't put both hands in my heart at the same time.
All right. Well, Simon, if you can stay on, then I'll give you a healing. Then.
So I'll have to get a phone that has the kind of apparatus which allow to be heard around the room.
Okay. All right. Simon, if you could stay on then past a few more minutes, and I'd love to give you a healing. And then, Paul, we've got about 2 minutes left, and I want to give you the rest of the time to wrap up your wonderful interview today. And thank you so much.
I'd like to just say to everyone that I picked the title of the book, Hope Restored, mm-hmm. very deliberately, because if we do the things that I think have to be done, there will be hope. If we don't, there will be no hope.
Right.
It's about as clear as that, that the way it is.
Right.
But I'm hoping because there are so many decent people, and if we can just mobilize them and all getting them rowing in the same direction, both sides of the boat, and get going in the same direction, that we can persuade the Congress, which itself has been so far in the dark that it doesn't have a clue what's going on.
Right.
And I know that from the show that we put on, I guess it was...
2 days ago.
2013.
Yeah. Okay.
The disclosure.
Right.
We just have to let them know what they have... Not being told.
Paul, we've run out of time, my friend. I'm so happy you could come on, but I'd love to have you on anytime in the next month or two. We'll work out a schedule. I want to give you 2 hours to talk about your book. So,
well, we'll meet again, Ted. And thanks to you, and best to Simon, and to all of you listeners.
Okay, please stay tuned, my friends, for the next hour. We're going to do a mass healing for eyesight, and with Simon on the air.